Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Our good friend Tom Appel joins us now for a look back at 2019 in green automotive news and what 2020 might bring us. Tom, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Can you believe 2019's almost over?
No, this has been an incredibly fast year. So much going on in the industry. It just seems that as time marches on, years go faster.
It clearly does, and it just seems like we're packed with more information. So it's sort of like when you're speeding by on a highway and there's no development on the side. It just farmland, it seems like it takes forever to go, but when there's development, it moves much quicker. So
exactly right.
We've got, two parts here is looking back at 2019 on some of the green cars out there and then look ahead of 2020. So let's maybe start with 2019. And one of the big hot areas is EV trucks. And probably the biggest news out there was the Tesla Cybertruck. Love it or hate it, Tesla knows how to make a grand appearance and really sensationalize his product out there. The truck is stunning. You know, it's very different than anything out there on the road. And wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's a fascinating play by Tesla and Elon Musk. And one of the things that he did so well was to leverage the contempt of the traditional truck media. This truck is extremely aggressively styled, some say childishly styled. But regardless of what you think of the styling, there's a real truck underneath, or there will be a real truck underneath. Nonetheless, he played the media for all it's worth. Everyone knows what this truck is. My mother knows what this truck is. And that's exactly what he wanted. But what's most interesting, and this is a difficult game, is that Tesla is making a play for the traditional American full-size pickup truck market. And that market has been difficult to crack for anyone who's not playing there. Nissan and Toyota have famously tried to do this, and both have backed off to some degree. And now we have an electric truck manufacturer, and a controversial one at that, who's making a play for the same extremely lucrative segment.
Well, and there's a lot of people rushing into that market. And when you look back, it seems like electric vehicles maybe should have started with trucks. You could have put much bigger batteries in those early on and gotten a lot more distance. But either way, we're here. And now we see the Tesla Cybertruck, the Rivian R1T, the Ford F-150 electric, the GM electric truck. So you're starting to get big players, coming into the truck market. What do consumers think about all this?
Well, that's what's interesting. And there was a survey recently published by AutoList. AutoList is a retail site for people looking for new and used vehicles. This is a great place for them to go and find those vehicles. And like so many retail sites, they put together their own research based on they can use the traffic they actually get to find respondents. And one of the interesting things that they learned doing a survey of 1,100 respondents is that people who have not yet owned a truck were far more predisposed to consider the electric vehicles than were people who had already owned a pickup truck. I think this is interesting. It speaks to that loyalty that is innate in this buyer group.
Tom, are pickup truck sales increasing worldwide, or is that mainly an American thing?
It's an American thing with potential growth in Africa, Russia, and Europe. But the traditional large American pickup truck is very much a North American phenomenon, Canada, the U.S., Mexico, and to some extent South America. But it's kind of a local phenomenon, as much as you can call that area local. With demand, American trucks are very large. And a little large for use in a lot of other markets. But they're also workhorses, too, so there is some need for them. But you'll find that the Cybertruck, for example, may have a market limited to this side of the hemisphere.
Do you think electric pickup trucks will increase their desirability worldwide?
We're going to see how that works. It might, because American trucks have kind of a dirty, inefficient image in other markets, and they're just considered a little bit large and a little bit thirsty. Also, Americans famously use large pickup trucks for personal use, which probably doesn't help their image a lot in other segments. But one of the things that electric trucks will bring to the market is torque. Electric motors famously produce a considerable amount of torque at very low RPMs, actually all of their torque at initially as they start up, which is really useful if you use a truck to work or for towing. So this is the kind of thing that may soften any sort of resistance to electric vehicles. And in other markets, that kind of efficiency may help build demand for American-style pickups.
Well, we could talk about pickup trucks all day. I think it's very glamorous class, and people like them here in America. But let's move on to other plug-in EVs. Looking back in 2019, what are your thoughts on the other EVs that really were a hit?
Well, one of the most interesting stories of the year happened almost a year ago. It was as we flipped the calendar last time, we were waiting to see if Tesla really could produce as many Model 3s as they kept promising that they would. And Elon Musk was out there promising that they could build and sell 25,000 vehicles a week. And while they never got to that number exactly, they are producing 15 to 20,000 vehicles a week, and they are selling almost that many in the U.S. So while that if people remember this, there were supposed to be 500,000 pre-orders for the Model 3. I'm not sure that that number ever actually existed or if that many buyers stuck around. But the Model 3 is now easily the best-selling electric vehicle, not only in the U.S., but in the world. So there is some success there, even if it's a little bit shy of the rather bold promises that Tesla made. And I think it's interesting because Tesla, that we keep thinking is on the verge of death, keeps crawling out of the grave and doing something big. And the Model 3 success is a huge story of last year.
Well, it's also, to me, just very rewarding to think that one person can still make a difference. You know, Elon Musk, love him or hate him, he's changing the auto industry. You know, something that's been around 100 years, here's a newcomer that pops in and totally disrupts the market. So I really applaud his efforts, and I hope he continues to have great success out there.
His charisma is part of what is selling these vehicles, his just anti-establishment attitude. And I don't really care how electric vehicles get sold. I'm just really happy that people are buying them.
Yes. Well, how about hybrid cars? What were the key stories in 2019?
One of the big stories in 2019, and will continue to be a story in 2020, is hybrids and plug-in hybrid vehicles. Sales of hybrids are declining somewhat. The Prius, for example, once the king of the green automotive segment for a while, it was the greenest and most affordable way to do something green with an automobile. Prius sales are way off, and part of the reason for that is that Toyota sells a bunch of other hybrid vehicles that are a little bit less committed to being green, at least stylistically. But plug-in hybrids are the big news here, and we're going to see more plug-in hybrids, even though demand for them doesn't seem to be that strong. And part of the reason is that in Europe, manufacturers need to have vehicles that can run on electricity only to travel in some cities because of the tax structure there. So to get into cities like, I think it's London, and I'm trying to think of what the other big cities in Europe are, but increasingly it's going to be necessary to have something as electric or partially electric to dodge tax to drive in these cities during the daytime. So as part of that development, we're going to be seeing plug-in hybrids here from a lot of manufacturers, and those will be their only hybrids in a lot of cases.
Let's move on to high mile per gallon gas cars. Even in a down market, you can grab market share. What high mile per gallon gas car did you like best in 2019?
You know what? I just drove the Honda Civic Sport Touring. And this is an interesting vehicle for Honda because this is actually not built in the U.S. It's built in London at their Swindon plant. So it's got a European feel to it. It's part of the American Civic lineup, but it's interesting to the extent to which it feels European. But I recently drove that on the highway between Chicago and Milwaukee a couple of times. It was just a strange weekend. And I saw nearly 35 miles per gallon in routine driving from a car that is described as compact but feels roomy. It's all sorts of fun to drive. And I'd like to take a nod also to the Toyota Corolla, which has a new engine that Toyota developed not hybrid, it's just a regular gasoline engine, but those will also regularly break 30 and even see 40 if you have a light foot on the highway.
What about alternative fuel vehicles? Anything in 2019 in the biodiesel, hydrogen fuel cell, solar area that was newsworthy?
No, not really. There's always discussion about fuel cell. And I think the big fuel cell movement, one of the things that we've seen, because Toyota is now working on this as well, is that we're probably going to see fuel cell settle naturally into some sort of alternative option for over-the-road trucking. This is because the hydrogen that you need to pack is very easily packaged on a very large truck. Additionally, storing hydrogen, which is complicated, and the distribution of hydrogen, which is complicated, is best handled in places like truck lots where there would be a lot of regular users of the of hydrogen as fuel. I don't think that we've seen any movement towards hydrogen and fuel cell vehicles on a consumer basis, and I don't think we're going to. We've been talking about fuel cell vehicles for like 20 years now, and there aren't really more options for filling them than there were then, and they're all really near Los Angeles and San Francisco.
Like any industry, the automakers have had their green car failures. Lexus, I think, had two, the Lexus LS600H. And the HS250H and the Honda Insight. In your mind, what were the biggest green car failures in 2019?
I think one of the biggest green car failures is the plug-in hybrid. I think we're finding that consumers do not understand what that is. And for people who don't know now, a plug-in hybrid is a hybrid vehicle that you can plug in to gain additional hybrid efficiency plus some electric-only range. And this can work very well. One of the best examples out there now, and probably one of the most practical, is the Chrysler Pacifica Hybrid, which is Chrysler's minivan. You can get about 40 miles of plug-in range from that vehicle if you plug it in. And once you've used up that 40 miles, it just operates like a hybrid on gasoline. So during the week, maybe you can be electric only. And on the weekend, if you go on a trip, you can fill the gas tank and go on a long trip. But I think that that's very complicated sounding to the public. And public acceptance of plug-in hybrids is very low, despite the fact that it is actually a viable option.
Well, I've got so many more questions, but we're coming to the end of our time. So if you could sum up one trend for 2019 with green cars, it might be?
It might be the normalization of the electric vehicle. I think that we're seeing more and more EVs hit the market. I think acceptance is still going to be slow, but I think resistance has tempered somewhat as I think the public is starting to understand what they are and how they work, and I think that's a good sign.
And that is good news. And my old friend, thank you so much for all you've done throughout the years here on GreenSense. We wish you and your family happy holidays, and we'll look forward to talking to you in the new year.
Sounds great. Happy holidays.
That's Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive and the host of the new podcast, Car Stuff. Find out more at consumerguide.com. This is Robert Colangelo, and you can subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Is experimenting with a new kind of cargo bike. DHL is part of the pilot program, and we're joined by Chris Wessel, Senior Manager, U.S. Fleet, DHL Express, to tell us more about commercial cargo bikes now whizzing through the streets of Manhattan. Chris, welcome to GreenSense.
Thank you so much for having me.
The obvious answer to why cargo bikes is they're better for traffic congestion. Any other benefits?
Yeah, so, one of the primary benefits that we see, of course, is it gets us closer to our zero emission goal. We have that objective as a company as part of Deutsche Post DHL by the year 2050. We'd like to be net zero emissions. So an added benefit to taking a vehicle off the street will be, you know, of course, a cargo bicycle has zero emissions. So another benefit in addition to less congestion in the city.
Many cities have messenger bicycle delivery services. Describe a cargo bike and how that differs from that traditional messenger bicycle delivery service we all see out there.
Yeah, no, great question. So the bicycle that we use and are using in other countries is called a cubicycle. So if you can envision it, it's a four-wheeled bike, kind of a sitting platform, and then it has a cargo container sitting on the back portion of the cubicycle. So the cargo capacity is about 330 pounds, and then the driver of the cubicycle, you know, sits kind of in a sitting position, so not standing up, kind of a standing up position that you would notice on a normal, I guess, bicycle, but more of a sitting position with control similar to like a joystick in each hand, where he or she can control the braking, the steering, and everything else. So it's a little bit of a different look. And again, it's a four-wheeled bicycle.
Did DHL develop these, or are these custom made?
Yeah, so we work with a company out of Sweden that developed this cubicycle called VLOVE. That's V-E-L-O-V-E. And again, we've had great success with these. You know, we use them in not only Europe, but Asia Pacific as well. So we have multiple bikes on the road in those countries. And, you know, again, excited to see it, you know, finally approved for usage in New York City. But yes, we worked with VLOVE to help bring this to fruition.
What's one of those bicycles cost?
Well, it's not like your normal bicycle that you'd get at your bike shop. They're a little bit more expensive. You know, so, you know, we do have, pricing with VLOVE, but, again, not your normal, type bicycle. It's, you know, can be, much more than that. I probably won't, give you our exact pricing, but needless to say, it's less than a vehicle, but more than a normal bicycle.
If you could just give us a ballpark, is it 5,000, 10,000?
Yeah, somewhere exactly in that middle range there.
Okay.
Between 5 and 10,000. Yep.
So that's quite an investment to have a fleet of these. So cost wasn't really an issue driving that decision. Was it really, as you mentioned earlier, part of your sustainability goals? Was that the major driver?
That is a major driver. But again, bear in mind, you know, when we order a commercial vehicle, you know, you're talking, you know, anywhere from 4 to 5 times the cost of that. So it's much more inexpensive than a normal commercial cargo van that we are driving and delivering packages with at DHL. So the cost is, you know, a considerable factor. But yes, I'd say the driving factors for us are the zero emission target that we have, as well as helping, you know, take vehicles off the road in congested high density markets like Manhattan, New York City.
How much effort does it take to pedal or drive one of these vehicles? And do you have to pass a fitness test to be one of the drivers?
That's a great question. So they are what we consider electric assist vehicles. So they do have two batteries on it, and they do have some pedal assist capabilities. So, you know, we haven't gotten so far as to develop any kind of fitness program to drive the cubicycle, and they do have the option for the electric pedal assist that will help you, you know, go up a hill or an incline or anything like that. So, you know, somebody like me who, you know, is in average shape, I would say, would be able to ride it with no problems.
Was New York City picked because it has such a high density of people in such a small space? And the follow-up question there is, can this be scaled up in other cities with less population density and still be economical?
Yeah, so New York City was a great partner for us. We've been efforting getting this approved in New York City for the last couple of years, and pleased to see that the New York City DOT and Commissioner Trottenberg have been receptive to this and excited to see this pilot up and running. So the short answer is yes. You know, because it's high density, because the traffic, as you know, in Manhattan especially, is particularly challenging and congested. You know, that really is we see as a major benefit to, you know, helping us with the speed of our deliveries and again, getting vehicles off the road. So the short answer is yes. As far as scaling into other markets, the way we visualize this, at least from a fleet perspective at DHL, is, you know, other high density markets where we can take a vehicle off the road. You know, for example, maybe a downtown Chicago or San Francisco, or, you know, other markets where we have a lot of stops within a small geographic range. You know, we see that as another possibility as we, you know, hopefully see a successful pilot in New York. We'd love to roll this out in other markets.
I think that also speaks to just the granularity of the delivery business, is that you really need different vehicles for different markets. One size doesn't fit all these days. Why did you launch this in late fall, early winter, not maybe in the spring or summer when the weather was more agreeable for human transport power?
That's a great question. So, you know, we are working in conjunction, as I mentioned, with the New York City DOT, and I think you know, we'd love to see these on the road, you know, essentially during our peak season, which for most logistics companies, of course, is the holiday season, quarter four essentially. So I think that was you know, from a visibility perspective, that was one, I guess, mark in our favor. But to your point, you know, in a market like New York, yes, you know, you're going to have to deal with weather, temperature, et cetera. So, you know, probably would have been, you know, potentially better suited for warm weather, but we're going to roll with the timeline that they put out for us.
Is the intent to operate these year round in all season and all weather conditions?
Yeah, that's the intent. Of course, we want to make sure that we're operating these in a safe manner for both our employees and our customers, as well as, you know, other pedestrians and drivers in the city. So that is paramount, first and foremost. You know, will these be driving through a blizzard in Manhattan? You know, probably not. So we have to, you know, take that into consideration. Safety for us is first and foremost, but you know, assuming no, you know, major weather events like that, yes, we'd like to run these year round.
Launching any new program has its issues and challenges. The program's pretty new. So what have you learned in the first few weeks of operations?
Yeah, so again, just to reiterate, we are not operational as of today, as you and I sit here talking. We are still working through a couple of issues from a... you know, a company perspective. We need to align this with our labor force. We are a unionized labor force at DHL, so we need to align with that from a safety perspective. We need to make sure we are 100% compatible both with the City of New York's requirements as well as our own internal safety team. And then we are also working through the agreement with the City of New York. So, you know, we will be up and running very soon, but as soon as we work through those details, we'll have more, I guess, live data to share.
How long does the pilot program last?
So right now, we're the pilot program is targeted for 6 months. So after that, you know, the City of New York wants to review it and have the option to extend it. But right now, it's targeted for 6 month pilot program.
And what's your metric for success?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, from a fleet perspective, of course, what I'd like to see is, you know, making sure the Cuba cycles are 100% operational, no mechanical issues with the bikes, make sure they're easy to use for our couriers. And from an operational perspective, you know, they have certain KPIs that they would like to, you know, either maintain or hit as far as number of stops per route. And, you know, they have other KPIs that they're gonna measure from an operational perspective. And then, of course, our safety team wants to make sure that there would be no incidents with the bikes as well. So really, it's a kind of a cross section of our company and making sure that everyone has their, you know, KPIs aligned with the bike. So multiple different groups within our company will measure it in different ways.
How long have you been involved with the program?
Yeah, so I've been with DHL for 6 years, and I've been our senior manager of U.S. Fleet for the last 2 years. You know, when I came on board with our fleet team 2 years ago, this was something that was on our radar. You know, again, we worked hand in hand with the city of New York to get the Cuba cycle approved. You know, again, we've had success with it in other countries in Europe and Asia Pacific. So excited to see it kind of come to fruition. And just like to reiterate as well, this is just one facet of our Go Green mission. You know, in addition to electric vehicles, hybrid vehicles, alternative fuel vehicles. So this is kind of one prong of many that we are efforting to make sure that our Go Green targets are hit.
Well, we hope to see more Cube Cycles and more cities in the coming future. So thank you very much for joining us and sharing your thoughts on this pilot program.
Thank you, Robert. Really appreciate the time. And thank you so much for learning a little bit more about DHL Express and what we're doing here in the U.S. To go green.
That's Chris Wessel, Senior Manager, U.S. Fleet DHL Express, telling us about the new commercial cargo bike program. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is GreenSense. You could subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com. We hope you enjoyed this edition of GreenSense. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and you can check out the list of radio stations that air our show. All you have to do is stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.